It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, indeed, and here we are, off and running live for this 13th day of August 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. We had some thunderstorms earlier today, so the standard disclaimer applies. If there's any more of those today, then, well, there's every chance in the world, of course, that the rickety, antiquated, coal-fried, profit-driven Appalachian Power Grid may go south. So if you hear a bunch of beeping and then the program disappears, that's what will have happened. But I don't expect it. I just like to put the caveat out there just because it has been known to happen. Hi, I'm Bob. And here it is, Thorn in the Side Thursday. The weeks are just flying by. Like, day after tomorrow, it'll be mid-January or something. I can't even think about it. Right now the run-up is to November the 3rd. Whatever that means. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so, consequently, we send out thanks on this particular day to our 13th of the month subscribers and contributors. That means thanks to Greg and thanks to Tracy and thanks to Gary and Gaia. Thank you all very kindly. Once upon a time, the 13th of the month was the loneliest day of the month. It isn't anymore. Thanks to Greg and Tracy. Thank you very kindly. And so the fundraising goal to keep funded for the week and keep paying bills is $500. If we knock some of that down, it'll be less than $700 tomorrow for Friday on the front porch. But that's where it stands. If you'd like to help out, if you can help out, do not hurt yourself. A lot of people in this country are hurting right now. And I said early on, we'll just try to keep this program going. For the sake of people who want the conversation and need the conversation, last night was a good example of it. And I thank Tracy for sharing in the way she did. Don't hurt yourself. But if you can help, please do. And maybe we'll, you know, and we're trying to make sure there's a September. And in September, we'll try to make sure there's an October. But the PayPal interface is over at HeadOn.live. It's real easy to negotiate. If you'd like to be a brand new subscriber and jump in alongside Greg and Gary and Gaia on this 13th of the month, well, there's a little box that you check there. Real easy. And set it and forget it. And if you do a $10 a month subscription, well, by golly, you will have set yourself back a half a stick of chewing gum per program. I don't know how you feel about a half a stick of chewing gum. Even when I was a kid, I didn't think a half a stick of chewing gum went very far, and it was a lot cheaper back then. But anyway, that's where we stand. the gang has gathered, or the early arrivers have gathered over in the Horn chat room. If you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time, all time zones in between and the great globe around, well, just click on chat room at headon.live, and if you've never done it before, pick out a screen name and a password, or use the one you've already got if you have, and you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Ashley and Anatole and Original Sailor Chick and Otto DeShot and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And they'll all be happy to see you because it's a darn fine conversation. Good time in there. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, refrains from folding space during months that don't have ours in them, because they do have a lot of heat in them there in Northern California. He is also capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks to Jeremy for getting us started. We've gotten down under the 500-buck mark. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very, very kindly for being there of an evening. It is much appreciated indeed. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and oh my God, it's a veritable multi-flora rose patch here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cold Trump Genistan. For those of you who have never experienced multi-flora rose, it was imported into Appalachia back in the, I think 1950s or so, from out west, where on the vast and wide open spaces it could be controlled somewhat, and when it was brought here, it was brought as the living hedgerow, or the living fence, or some such bullshit as that, and proceeded to take the place. The South got the kudzu for erosion control, and it took the place, and Appalachia got multiflora roses. And the little bastards will pull, they will, when you go rabbit hunting or whatever, they got these things called brush buster pants. Got a real heavy layer of fabric that resists things like thorns and briars. And multiflora rose just laughs at that. So this is a real multiflora rose patch of Thorn in the Side Thursday. Mm-hmm. But before we go there, just because after the conversation last night, I've been thinking a lot about how we need to sort of, get out of our own heads a little bit. And for me, nothing does that better than considering the wider universe at large. I don't know if you saw this story earlier, but astrophysicists and astronomers and the like were fretting over the past few months. I mean, it's 725 light years away. They fret. Astronomers and astrophysicists do over things that are 725 light years away. Betelgeuse, the star Betelgeuse in the constellation of Orion, is about 725 light years away. And they began to notice that it was dimming. The scientists did. I mean, assuming we can trust scientists. I don't know, do you believe scientists? You know, we had that story yesterday evening of the Cherokee County, Georgia school superintendent who said, "Now I realize that ain't everybody, all our parents, believed the scientists." And every time, you know how I am, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard to me when I see believe and science in the same sentence, because that means we've already lost the battle before we've even gotten onto the field, because we've reduced science to the level of religion and superstition and crackers that turn into meat in the belly and wine that turns into blood and tinkling bells that turn into prayers and headgear that makes the deity like you better and all the other stupid things that accompany religion. that superintendent, if he wanted to say something like that, should have said, I realize that I am superintendent of a county school system in a county in which scientific literacy is at a bare minimum, but he would have lost everybody by the time he got done with that because most of those words would be beyond them. And that's not me picking on Georgia. Cherokee County is about 40 miles north of Hotlanta. I live in a hotbed of ignorance, poor education, and superstition. I just do. Because it's never really meant that much. And while we're at it, what's this got to do with Beetlejuice? I don't know. While we're at it, all these hand-wringing goddamn maggots, these pearl-clutching Republican governors, we gotta get the cheerings back to skew. Since when have they ever given a tinker's damn about children receiving a decent education? When? I mean, for pity's sakes. Down in Florida, illegitimate white supremacist adjacent Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who has monkeyed his state's COVID-19 response through the roof, and only became governor because of the assistance of real live, no kidding Nazis and the people who looked at the Nazis and said, that's okay, I can vote with Nazis. He compared, I kid you not, reopening schools in Florida with the Navy SEAL raid that killed Osama bin Laden. Now there he sits in a state with a couple of county sheriffs who are eager to kill their own citizens, one of whom looks like a young Saddam Hussein, as noted yesterday, and sending children to get sick needlessly and take their virus particles home to mommy and daddy and meemaw and papaw and cousin yeehaw. See, I do remember these things. Comparing that to a commando raid to take out a guy who masterminded an attack on, right, an attack that some people still don't think happened, by the way. More on that. Moron. M-O-R. You get it. Because, you know, there's a lot of overlap between these various and sundry days of the week. Yeah. Ron Monkey Up DeSantis said sending children back to school in Florida is as heroic as sending Navy SEALs off to kill Osama bin Laden. One cannot help but wonder in all of this who is playing the role of Osama bin Laden in this little set piece. But of course, it's not just Florida. It's Wisconsin too. Oh, yes, sweet Jesus, it's Wisconsin. Because the Elmbrook schools in Wisconsin, well, they had themselves a Board of Education meeting 2 days ago. And you know what happens at Board of Education meetings, at least in the modern era. The weirdos show up. And so, here we have weirdo COVIDiot mask hole lady who doesn't just not like masks, she doesn't like social distancing, because jeebus.
Good. All right, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for being here and all the work that everyone has done to try to...
Good evening, ladies and germs. What?
Get our kids back to school.
Now, the board members and the recorder and whatnot, they're all socially distanced. All of them are wearing masks. One of them's even wearing a plastic face shield. Everybody's wearing the mask except the woman. I'm not going to use the term lady. The woman who's standing there, and she wasn't content to simply speak into the microphone on its gooseneck stand at the podium. She took it out of its clip so that she could hold on to it as if she was about to, I don't know, sing them a rousing rendition of Volare. Or maybe Time to Say Goodbye.
As a parent, we all appreciate it. We can appreciate how challenging it must be for such a high quality and such a large school district. Tonight, you will cast a very important vote regarding the future of our children. And I'm here to express my opinion, having two daughters in the district and sharing the same opinion with many other parents.
Okay, so she's speaking, she claims to be speaking for other parents. I think the proceedings probably should have been stopped and said, if that's the case, bring them in. COVID or no COVID, for what you're about to say, we want to see how many other mask-hole COVIDiots there are in this school district. We want to know what we're up against. In terms of just how much stupidity there is in the Elmbrook, the parents group school district. Cynthia pointing out, you're right yet again, Bob. Belief has nothing to do with science. The word is accept. I accept the finding of science. Yeah, Cynthia, accept, acknowledge. For some people, maybe even understand, comprehend. James in Illinois. Jesus loves you. So he's going to throw the chips and salsa in for free. Enjoy your tacos. Hey, the latest boutique special limited edition, one of the latest from the Lay's folks, is street taco-flavored wavy Lay's. They're not too bad. But how the hell did we get there? Then, Oh, man. Says Ron and Raleigh. These Republicans do reach for some equivalents, don't they? Hoo-wee! Wait until the QAnoners start to add their 2 cents worth. Oh, they're getting started, Ron! Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding Ron DeSantis, it's like sending Navy SEALs into the OBL compound. Oh, no, Bob. It makes complete sense. When those Navy SEALs were sent into that particular situation, there was no guarantee that they would come back alive. Same with the children's going to the school in the midst of the pandemic. Also, in this case, the fungus plays the role of OBL. Fungus? There's a fungus? Oh, maybe the virus. Because, I mean, remember, yesterday we had the massive attack of the killer onions. Ay-yay-yay. And so, back to Elmbrook. And who knows, maybe at some point, back to Beetlejuice. That's two. So they had their meeting and they decided to return to in-person learning 5 days a week. Because, well, what the hell? I mean, kids don't get it anyway, right? They don't get the Rona. And even if they carry it around, I mean, we can always knock off there's no loss in knocking off a few meemaws and papaws and cousin yeehaws. Just ask Josh Bernstein.
Second thing I'm going to say is much more controversial, but I don't care. When do I ever shy away from controversy?
Exactly.
America has been involved in war.
This is Josh Bernstein. This is a guy who has some 160,000 subscribers on YouTube. And periodically, in addition to his own skeevy little program, he shows up on the Nutramedical Report of Bill Deagle, which is what this is. He's never shied away from controversy. Oh, no. No, this is the guy who tried to put out a hit on Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. Oh, and then we got some more of that to deal with this evening, if I can remember to get around to it. But fuck, I'm still just trying to get back to Beetlejuice. Fuck! Three times.
In conflicts for years, okay? From the Revolutionary War to the Civil War to World War I to World War II to the Korean War to the Vietnam War to the war in Iraq.
Wait, he forgot something. World War II that was ended by the pandemic, or the flu pandemic. Just helping.
To the war in Afghanistan, we have fought and bled and lost limbs and died for the protection of our liberty and our freedom. If these seniors...
I'll about guarantee you Josh Bernstein or none of his have ever gotten anywhere near to that kind of a threat. Never heard a shot fired in anger. Not saying that I have either. I have heard him fired in gross negligence, but that's another story.
Can put a mask on or not, doesn't matter to me, and go to their grocery store or their bank and wait in line to do their business, then they can get up, get out of the house, and go down to the polling stations and vote in person. We need to make sure these seniors are voting in person. Now, here's the controversial part. Some of these folks may actually get sick. And that's sad, and it's unfortunate, and I hope that it doesn't happen. And some of them, yes, they may even die and pass away. So be it. I don't mean to be cowardly.
So be it. They may die and pass away. It's the "and" that makes it true wingnut welfare art. Die and pass away. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York picked it up. Wait, we? Who's this we you're talking about? Yeah, that's Josh Bernstein and that mouse in his pocket. So be it. Let them die and pass away.
I don't mean to be cruel. I don't mean to be insensitive.
That means he's cruel and insensitive as a matter of course, that he doesn't actually have to make an effort. It means that he's just a 24/7. What's that? The Professor Spicoli?
You dick!
Absolutely.
But we're not asking you to storm the beaches of Normandy here, and we're certainly not asking you to try to overtake, you know, Hamburger Hill either. We're asking you to get out of the house and go down and vote for President Trump so that you can secure your children and your grandchildren's future to make sure that they live in the freedom that you have enjoyed as well.
Here's the problem that goes with all of that. And that's the fact that he's also, I'm sure, a big proponent of opening schools. Meemaw and Papaw Maggot may not make it to Election Day under the current situation as it stands. Now, there's a calculus here, and I have no doubt that Ron Monkey Up DeClantis has taken it into account, that knowing that this disease disproportionately impacts communities of color. So he's kind of calculating that maybe in the grand scheme of things, there will be less maggots lost than there are potential Biden voters. Because remember, as outrageous as that sounds, that was the original operating theory of, you know, Sonderkommando Jared. Let's not worry about it. It only affects the blue states. It's only going to kill the people that are going to vote for Biden anyway. Burn, baby, burn. Jesus. so that's, you know, that's just, you know, your average everyday garden variety street level maggot with a microphone, Josh Bernstein, talking to Dr. Dill Beagle, Bill D. What? On the Nutramedical report. Man, wrong racket. But let's go back to Elmbrook. And maybe eventually we'll find ourselves... Wait again, says Steve in New York. We? Who the living fuck is this guy? The only war he's ever seen possibly is playing the board game Risk. No, he wages a constant war with his waistline. And as a chubby guy, I don't have any problem pointing that out in someone else. Especially a right-wing dickhead. An eliminationist right-wing dickhead. Who calls for the assassination of people with whom he politically disagrees. And suggests even Second Amendment patriots squeeze off a few rounds at the local constabulary should they show up to take our guns. Mm-hmm. And again, try to get back to that. But Jesus, it's going to be a big trip because I still got to go back to you-know-where. But right now we're in Elmbrook, Wisconsin. And remember, this woman who handles a microphone like a lounge singer has declared that she is speaking not for herself, but for many other parents. Kind of makes you wonder about Elmbrook. Hey, Ralphs, where's Elmbrook? Because, you know, she said a school system of this size.
In the district as well, some who may be here tonight to speak and others who are not. We're concerned about the disregard for our civil liberties and your plan.
Her civil liberties? Is she a student in Elmbrook? What, fifth grader? Nah, I'm guessing 11th grader. Assuming she got held back a few years. Her civil liberties. I wonder which civil liberties those would be. The right not to quarter troops in her home? The right to be tried by a jury of her peers? The right against self-incrimination? No, she's kind of thrown out the window here. By the time she's done, we're all going to know a lot about her that she'd probably just assume we hadn't known. No, she's... not concerned about that. She's concerned about the only civil liberties that are in the Bill of Rights, as far as she knows. Elmbrook School District. Thank you, Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department this evening. Oh, okay. Elmbrook Schools is a big square. Bounded on the east by I-94. It's west of West Allis, west of Wauwatosa, and west of Milwaukee. But it's northeast of Waukesha and appears to butt up against Pewaukee. This apparently, I'm guessing geographically, this explains a lot. Yeah. She's got her some civil liberties, and she's concerned. She's a concerned parent. That's what she is, concerned.
And
Did I say get the hockey puck? Remember, in the age of COVID, when we get the hockey puck, you want to get a good bite of the hockey puck, do a loop of the duct tape, and then put your mask back on. But wash your hands before you put the hockey... And wash, the, for God's sake, sanitize the hockey puck.
Tonight as well. Tonight you even encouraged people to watch online instead of participate in the meeting, which is their right. Even under King Evers' edict, we were allowed the right...
Wait, who? Oh, King Evers' edict. Oh, she's being what passes for clever among the mask holes and COVIDiots. She's referring to the governor of the state of Wisconsin.
...to declare an exemption to the masks. That was not honored tonight. and people were turned away. And I think that's disgraceful.
Oh, it's disgraceful that COVIDiot mask holes didn't get to come in and spew all over everybody. But she's a patriot. So she ain't wearing no mask, because Jeebus. Kind of gave it away there, didn't I? Yeah. Oh, that explains even more. Ralph's letting me know that this was part of James Sensenbrenner's district. There we go. Yep. That says a ton.
Well, guess what? I'm exempt, and I'm also 6 feet from you, so good thing you can hear me. We want to see school open 5 days a week.
And spoiler, they gave her her wish.
And we want to see our kids go back to a normal routine. Our children have suffered enough.
Translation, we want the little fuckers out from underfoot. Note coming from James in Illinois. Dying for the right to vote. I understand why some died for the right to vote. It was wrong for that to have been required, but we were supposed to be past that. But the right has always done everything they could to deny the vote to as many of us as possible, so they're reveling in this. Not that they've thought it through, because they have to understand there's going to be dying for the right to vote on both sides of this stupid conflict. Wouldn't it be ironic if old Dill Beagle got the Rona? Or Josh Bernstein? There will be, on the other hand, if this woman in Elmbrook School District in Wisconsin, if she gets the Rona and dies and passes away, there will be no irony involved in it whatsoever. Because she will have done everything in her power to make sure that she's getting it. And the goddess of irony does not work that corner. The goddess of irony does not play among those who are actively working to supplant her. They want her children to go back to normal in this into suffering. What is she? Is she admitting that the school cooks better than she does? What? And you got to wonder, she says she has 2 daughters in the system. Given the fact, for instance, that Rudy Giuliani's daughter recently stepped out into public and said, hey, I'm voting for Joe and Kamala. Make no mistake. You know, a lot of times these parents prove an embarrassment to their offspring. It really depends on the degree to which they have been indoctrinated by religious maniacs.
Mentally, with their grades and their learning. Depression and anxiety have been on the rise in this community, and it's affecting our children's mental well-being.
Wouldn't it be interesting if this was a country that took things like mental health, I don't know, seriously? Where one could get access to mental health care as easily as, say, one could get a box of cereal at the grocery store? Or something along those lines? Fill one's tank with gasoline down to the Rippy Mart? Crazy, I know. Now, bear in mind, this woman has probably never had a concern about mental health in her entire misbegotten days. Just like most Republicans really never gave a fuck about educational systems. I know how this woman votes. And she, if questioned, she probably will wax poetic on her concern for the precious little fetuses. But suddenly she's a mental health expert.
The children have been with each other all summer, so having them together 5 times a week is net neutral in cause and effect. They've been doing it all summer. And we are where we are.
What? Does the Elmbrook School District not have summer vacation? I mean, isn't that just any other summer? Or are they out bringing in the sheaves and reaping the wheat? And, you know, because that was the original reason for summer breaks in American school systems. So the youngins could help bring in the crops. That was back when we were going to be an agrarian nation of semi-educated yeoman farmers along the lines of the dreams of Thomas Jefferson.
Your plan does not show any milestones for when these processes and policies would be reevaluated, or when.
And I do have to say, I love the upspeak, don't you? Every sentence ends as a question, even if it isn't one. Stephen, New York, civil liberties and masks. All of a sudden, this occurs to me. This equating masks with civil liberties reminds me of Walter Sobchak making everything about Vietnam. To paraphrase, I did not watch my buddies die face down in the muck so that the government could force people to wear a mask to stop a virus that has so far killed 170,000 people. I thought there was going to be a reference to Shabbos there. I don't roll on Shabbos.
When they would sunset based on achieving different milestones. We do not support the continuation of virtual learning, partly or fully. In addition to learning online being...
You know, we, her and that mouse in her pocket. We. So, let's say you're not a mask hole and you're not a COVIDiot, but you happen to have the misfortune to live within the boundaries of the Elmbrook School District. You don't have a choice. Well, you do have a choice. It's a Hobson's choice. The horse by the door or no horse at all. In school learning 5 days a week, damn it. And so moms and dads and meemaws and papaws and yeehaws, who want to protect their children, will have to go through the barbed wire, flaming barbed wire hoop jumping, hi Scott, of setting up to homeschool their children. And that's probably something that a lot of people are not set up to do. It's not easy, and the fact of the matter is most homeschooling in this country is up to its eyeballs in religious doctrine, so that your average homeschooled kid winds up, you know, something like...
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah. I wish that was less realistic than it is. Megan asks, how soon before the Flavor-Aid? Cowbell to Megan for remembering that it was Flavor-Aid. These fucks are so deep in their denial of reality that it's only a matter of time. They can't wrap their minds around the fact that this virus kills and it doesn't care who you are. Well, it ain't killed them. Jesus has protected them. The only people it seems to be killing is the people that Jesus don't protect. And them's the folks what die and pass away.
Subpar, we pay for school instruction, which also includes the security of our children. Online brings tremendous risk, as many parents will not be home. They're working. And there is cross-access between families you don't know, meaning anyone at home, with that other child who also is online, has some degree of access virtually to your home to see where your child does their schoolwork, to see their bedroom, etc., anything else that's showing on that screen.
Huh. She's worried about people seeing into the homes of children who are learning online. But I'll bet never once has she written a letter to her state legislators, her governor, her county commission, her school board, her members of the House, or her two senators. Especially not that Tammy Baldwin. About gun violence in schools. Because, you see, it's worth remembering that the one thing we have not had is school shootings during this bizarre time through which, a deadly time through which we live. And she's not about to start. Because, you know, she loves them fetuses, etc., and she loves them Second Amendment rights. I have no doubt. Hell, she might be packing heat even as she speaks. Maybe that's why she stepped away to the podium, in case she has to draw down on any of them, in case they might turn out to be liberals.
So we're putting unsupervised children at risk by this. If online was effective, we could save a tremendous amount of money and close the Elmberg School District completely. It's not. And we all know that. Responsible parents will have to have someone at home with their children, which will result in people not going back to work, leaving their jobs.
Ah, she's an economist.
Loss of income and tax base. We demand.
Oh, she demands. Has she got a dynamite belt on? Maybe that.
We demand that you stand with us against the illegal and illogical order by the governor and his unelected and unconfirmed head of health, Robin Palm, to make our students wear masks. 6 foot distance and masks are a pagan ritual of safety.
This is where the hockey puck comes in. You've already gotten a hint.
An exemption to the masks. That was not honored tonight, and people were turned away, and I think that's disgraceful. Well, guess what? I'm exempt. And for the continuation of virtual, and we all know that, responsible parents will have illegal and illogical order
by
the governor and his unelected and unconfirmed head of health, Robin Palm, to make our students wear masks. 6 foot distance and masks are a pagan ritual.
Pagan ritual.
Satanic worshipers.
Satanic worshipers.
Absorb that in. 6 feet, where did 6 feet come from, people?
Absorb that in. Man, it's just a linguistic smorgasbord this evening, isn't it? Absorb that in. Absorb that out. I don't think you can do that. It's downright non-Newtonian. Absorb that out. Masks and 6 foot distancing are satanic rituals. I'm pretty sure a scientist didn't tell her that. But see, because numbers, 6 foot social distancing, satanic rituals. Oh, save the children, QAnon. Trust the plan.
Why is it not 3? Why is it not 5? Why is it not 10? Why is it not 30? Why is it 6?
Heidi, your time is up.
I'm almost done. Thank you.
Your time is up. I'm almost done. See, that's after this much babble. That's where you say, "Hey." Cop, holler out. Because sooner or later, this fetishized notion of free speech, well, it's already killed 170,000 of us. And the disease is spreading. We've got a member of our community, a buddy in New Zealand, who sent along video last night of New Zealanders marching because they don't want to wear masks and they don't want a social distance and they don't want a lockdown no more because New Zealand had it kicked, but some cases cropped up, so they just locked back down. And they'll beat it back again. But no, these mask hole covidiots who have caught the American stupidity disease. Well, they decided to march around Auckland or Christchurch or somewhere, and potentially spread the Rona. The night before that, I saw it happening in Japan. Mask hole covidiots gathering there, objecting to the wearing of masks. And of course, we all know where it's being driven. Some, you know, giggling little assholes in a building somewhere in St. Petersburg, drinking straight out of the Patinka bottle, while they post bullshit into American social media and amplify stupidity accounts. I know, word knowing. Exude that out, says Flavio, also in Wisconsin. Ah, fuck it. What's the point of taking blood pressure meds anyway when you can't get away from these COVIDiots? Absorb that in. Die and pass away. Uh-oh, we done pissed Megan off. Shut the fuck up. Keep my religion out of your mouth, you troglodyte. Well, she is that. But see, she's fixated on the number 6, because see, she knows all about the mark of the beast. 666. Only that's not what it is. No. That was a vaguely coded reference to the Emperor Nero. But don't tell these bozos. They derive meaning from their otherwise meaningless lives by living in what Dr. Sagan called their demon-haunted world. Why ain't it 30 feet? Well, you stupid person. It's because 6 feet is roughly the distance that has been measured and thought to be the distance that droplets travel under ordinary circumstances. Granted, they travel further if you're, like, singing at the top of your lungs, say, a mighty fortress is our God, or onward Christian soldiers, or sneezing real hard, or yelling about how Q is going to take all the Democrat pedophile Satanists down, all of that shit. That's why. That is. That's where the 6 comes in. Although, there are new studies, because there's work being constantly done, because science doesn't just find an idea and just stop and say, well, that's it. No, that's religion that does that. Immutable and unchangeable. See, now I'm doing it. No, it turns out that particles are being found aerosolized out 13, 14, 15, 16 feet. But they are limited in scope, and it is not known whether or not they would be sufficient to trigger an infection. On the other hand, the Brazilians have found the, or I mean, the Chinese have found the Rona in Brazilian chicken wings. Do you have any idea how many chicken wings is a Brazilian? I'm giving myself a cowbell, just because that joke never gets old. And I try to keep up with as much as I can, but the information does constantly change because this is a fight for survival. And the only thing that helps is more knowledge, more inquiry, more science. More belief doesn't do a goddamn thing. Why not 60 feet? Why not 30?
Thank you. We've been very patient listening to all of you. So I'd like to finish.
Take that point ahead of educating and intellectual.
I'll finish quickly. Thank you. We are Christians. Our children do not practice satanic worship. We don't have them stand 6 feet apart from each other with facial coverings. Facts and data have been suggested here, but no logic.
Yeah, because 6 feet distance is a satanic ritual. That's a whole bunch of logic. Lady, I don't think your Vulcan pointy ears are sticking too good. Here's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening.
These masks are not proven to stop the virus or any other, and given the hygiene habits of children and teens, it can cause them physical harm.
No, it can't. Children and teens are generally stronger than, say, full-grown adults. And if full-grown adults can stand in an operating theater for 12 hours performing surgery, a kid can make it through an 8-hour school day. Yeah. If a member of the United States military can spend an entire day in a chemical weapons suit, little Esther there can manage to wear a cloth surgical mask for 8 hours, and yes, it works. It'll stop her from spreading her viral particles asymptomatically to others, and if others are wearing it, they won't spread theirs to her. That's how this operates. But not in the demon-haunted world. And I'm going to go ahead and break your hearts, because she keeps blathering, even though her time's up. And at no point does a guy with a great big butterfly net and one of those really groovy jackets with the really long sleeves come along and take her away to a happy place.
Including staph, shingles, MRSA, and all sorts of other things that are already beginning to happen as these children have gone back to athletics. I would like to finish. We have waited, and you kicked people out, so I'll take somebody else's time and finish. I've got about 30 seconds left. Gene, 30 seconds left. You are relying on the advice of doctors who are under the control of large medical organizations, which...
Oh, boy. Anybody want to take bets? Illuminati, George Soros, Bilderbergs? Trilateral, what? I mean, learned elders of Zion, maybe?
Benefit financially from the continuation of this emergency, as well as the edict of government officials with significant monetary vested investment in this pandemic. Ascension Ventures operate 462 acute care hospitals and numerous other healthcare-related facilities in 41 states and the District of Columbia combined. These limited partners generate $96 billion in annual revenue.
What's your source, lady? But, of course, the Elmbrook School Board doesn't challenge her. What's your source, lady? Oh, wait, you heard it on Alex Jones. Alex Jones.
And employ 572,000 associates on their website. And that's it. I have one last thing to say. Finally, My family has for generations fought for freedom all the way back to the Civil War. I have relatives who have fought.
Yeah. Those relatives, assuming they were Wisconsinites, fought on the right side of the Civil War, and they would be horrified because, well, she supports a president who likes statues of traitorous generals.
And died and paid the ultimate price to ensure that their children and grandchildren and generations to come could live in a free, representative republic that guaranteed life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These draconian measures for a disease that has very low morbidity, which is much less likely to happen to our kids than them getting in a car accident and dying.
No, it's not. But again, she's not repeating anything she knows. She's repeating things she believes.
Are their grandparents falling in the nursing home? Is draconian socialist tactics and overreach
socialism?
You were employed by the people of Brookfield and Elm Grove. You're elected to serve us. And the Elmbrook School Administration works at our pleasure. You do not work for Madison or any other unelected entity. Our government is of the...
Oh, there's nobody elected in Madison. How about that? The legislature of the state of Wisconsin meets in Madison, but they're unelected. Well, I mean, the Republicans are good Christians, but... Yeah, right. Want more time, says James in Illinois. Run down to the county registrar's office and pull your papers. Logic? In a religious context? Scott asks. Logic, I cast thee into the utter darkness. I rebuke thee. Yeah, I know. Wait a minute, we've just stumbled onto something. Lee in New York says, 666 is a reference to Nero? Follow this idea. People believe that the Bible's prophetic. 666 is a reference to Nero. You often call Trump nitwit Nero. Oh my, it is the orange mark of the beast. Well, don't forget that Jared owns a building, 666 Fifth Avenue. And yet somehow the evangelicals keep missing that part. Oh, I forgot the Bilderberg Group and the Rosicrucians. Sorry, Megan, I'll try to do better. Thank you.
People, by the people, and for the people.
Did we give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Shut up, he's on a roll.
This is one country, one nation under God, and we look to God for these answers when we can't figure it out. And I would suggest that you all do that.
Oh, she's so proud.
There's a wonderful prayer that he taught us to pray. It's called the Lord's Prayer, and you can find it in your Bible. Thank you for your time.
You'd almost feel sorry for this school board, because at this point in time, we are 1 hour and 1 minute into a meeting that lasts 3 hours and 51, and it doesn't get much better. But any sympathy I have for them goes out the window with the realization that when it was all said and done, they knuckled under, they gave in, they bowed to the pressure of ignorant white trash like that woman and sent their children to get sick, a percentage of them to die, and an even greater percentage to be of adults at home to be infected, die, and pass away. Monsters. Monsters walk among us. They do, they do. Jesus. And this is what's going to make it so difficult So very difficult. To win this fight. Although, I confess, you know, Steve in New York has already said, it's like a bad acid trip now, all we can do is ride it out. So that's Elmbrook, Wisconsin. Hey, back to Beetlejuice. What do you say? Because like I said, sometimes we got to get outside our own heads. So a few months back, scientists, astronomers, astrophysicists, and the like, were fretting, as noted. They fret about things 725 light years away. That Betelgeuse, one of the brightest stars in the sky, was about to blow up because it had dimmed. And stars often dim before they explode. And the explosion is really spectacular. But good news, I guess, certainly good news for Betelgeuse. Betelgeuse is about 1,000 times the size of our star, Sol. And it turned out it wasn't blowing up. It had the hiccups. And so thanks to the Hubble telescope, you know, another one of them tax and spend liberal programs, astronomers using the Hubble Space Telescope were able to determine that Betelgeuse had hiccuped a whole bunch of plasma out of its interior and into the outer reaches of the Betelgeusean atmosphere. And when it got out far enough to cool some, the plasma turned to dust. And it was, in fact, a big dust cloud that kept the full light of Betelgeuse from reaching us. And here's the mind-blowing part. All that fretting that those astronomers were doing was about something that happened 725 years ago, give or take, more or less, die and pass away, absorb in, Junior. And so, that hiccup actually happened somewhere around 1300 of the Common Era. To put that in context, if one was to calculate the generational rate of rats in Asia, one could say that was X number of generations that somewhere along the way, a rat got bitten by a flea. The flea was carrying bubonic plague. And it just ran a few generations. And then by about, 1340-45, the bubonic plague was running all around Eastern and Southern Asia. Oh, that's true. Betelgeuse did not hiccup, says Lee in New York. It passed gas. Star farts. If that's not a cowbell, I don't know what is. But anyway, somewhere along about the time that Beetlejuice farted, some random rats got moving. And by 1340 to 1345, bubonic plague was spreading in Asia. And via the trade routes, opened a little over 100 years earlier, or reopened, reestablished through the travels of people like Marco Polo. Well, the rats began traveling with the humans. And so about a half a century after the real-time fart of Beetlejuice, the Great Death appeared first on the Levant, and then via Venetian merchant ships in Venice, and then ran like wildfire throughout Europe, killing somewhere between a third and a half of the population and changing European culture forever. Changes that reverberate to us and echo down the centuries. Makes you wonder what star is doing which somewhere in the night sky that 500, 600, 700, 800 years from now we'll find out just what is just it happened to coincidentally, and it's nothing but pure coincidence. Happened along about the same time as the spread of COVID-19. And this kind of ascientific false cause and effect is where we get astrology from. And a belief that when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and love will fill the stars. And this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, the age of Aquarius, the age of Aquarius, the age of Aquarius, Aquarius. Told you we'd get back. Told you it might actually make a little bit of sense. And the same bullshit that drives those notions is the same bullshit that drives this COVIDiot at the Elmbrook School Board meeting in Wisconsin. The same kind of suspicion and superstition driven beliefs that have spread in this country even faster than the Rona itself. How about that? Oh, and by the way, I've got some thanks to extend. Thank you very kindly to Otto. Thank you, Otto. Thank you most kindly indeed. And thank you to Trevor. That means that we are down to $460. Thank you. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Otto. And so that means that we got $60 to go to finish off Tuesday. Thank you most kindly indeed. I guess the shit show's on. Or appears to be. Yeah, there's the monstrosity.
Unacceptable, and we've been doing that for a long time. They understand exactly how we feel, and big changes are being made. But with respect to Hong Kong, they get tremendous financial incentives so that they could do business and compete in the world. We've now withdrawn all of those incentives. It's going to be very hard for Hong Kong to compete. And I will tell you that the United States, and I say this from any standpoint you want to hear it, will end up making a lot more money because of it, because we lost a lot of business to Hong Kong. We made it very convenient for people to go there, for companies to go there. We've withdrawn all of that, and the United States will be a big...
So people are being crushed by an authoritarian dictatorship, and he's talking about making money. Got it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Aw, damn it. Apparently, I guess he attacked Kamala Harris some more. None of that's working particularly well. But interestingly, David in South Carolina said, I called it. Remember yesterday he said he was Xanaxed out of his mind? The Lincoln Project asking on Twitter, why is the president slurring? Noel Kasler responds, benzos. Short for benzodiazepine. You know, Xanax. Right. So, like I said, we've got any number of thorns to deal with. Lots and lots of thorns. Definitely thorns. You know, I gotta wonder about that school board, though. She looked them in the eye and told them that if they wanted children to wear masks, she called them Satanists. And not one of them even had enough self-respect to call her out when each and every one of those school board members is probably a practitioner of some mainstream world religion. Jeremy in Vermont says, hey, bud, my favorite pastime is going out on a clear night and staring at the stars, which is quite literally like a form of time travel. Sometimes you can look at the sky one night and see a star. It'll be gone the next, but it really died 12,000 billion years ago. And some of those even appear in the historical record. I think some of the ancient Chinese annals record supernovae. Meanwhile, as far as Elmbrook School District is concerned, Scott in San Diego says, it's true, Bob, you just refuse to see. We've heard sketchy reports about this for years. Could this be the powerful international conspiracy that controls your nether regions? Yeah. Fruit of the Illuminati underwear. Absolutely. Fruit of the Illuminati. So here we are, an hour and 14 minutes into the program, and it's Thursday. So that means we just so happen to have the Green News Report on hand. Let's see if there's some good news in the environmental front, shall we?
It's Thursday, August 13, 2020.
On the issue of this climate crisis, this is a fight against powerful interests. And leaders need to lead, follow, or get out the way. And get out the way, starting with Donald Trump.
Joe Biden taps Kamala Harris as his vice presidential running mate. Trump EPA rolls back methane pollution rules to profit the oil and gas industry. Good news for the nation's birds. Plus,
you can see where the muddy water is flowing, and a boom has been set up in an attempt to keep the material contained.
Another fossil fuel spill, this time in Pennsylvania.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The clean, what did she say? The New Deal there, I think it was she said the California Clean New Deal, whatever it is.
It's the Green New Deal, you blithering idiot, Jeanine Jenny, whatever it is, Fox News lady, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Joe Biden names Kamala Harris, and you talk about her environmental record, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. You've probably heard by now that presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden selected U.S. Senator from California, Kamala Harris,
who?
To be his vice presidential running mate.
Oh.
Major environmental groups like the Sierra Club recently endorsed Biden for president, no surprise there, and now they have also praised the selection of Harris, saying it indicates a sustained Democratic focus on environmental justice. Senator Harris has earned a 91% lifetime score on the League of Conservation Voters Environmental Scorecard. As California State Attorney General, Harris had a record of suing polluters like ExxonMobil. And in the U.S. Senate, she co-sponsored the Green New Deal resolution.
Oh, I think you mean the Clean New Deal. I've heard of that on Fox News.
In her own campaign for president, Harris's climate policy proposals put environmental justice front and center and labeled climate solutions both a moral imperative and an economic opportunity. Just last week, Harris and Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez formally introduced the Climate Equity Act, centered on frontline communities that are disproportionately burdened by pollution and climate impacts. On Wednesday, in her first joint campaign appearance with Biden, climate was at the top of her list.
This election isn't just about defeating Donald Trump or Mike Pence. It's about building this country back better. And that's exactly what Joe and I will do. We'll create millions of jobs and fight climate change through a clean energy revolution.
Climate scientists have warned with increasing urgency that the next 10 years will seal the trajectory of global temperatures and living conditions for all life on the planet for the next century. So the November 3rd election really is an inflection point, a crossroads for the planet.
Didn't you say that 4 years ago?
Yes. But every election is now going to be that important.
I guess it is.
By the way, Biden also announced that if elected president, he would block uranium mining near the Grand Canyon in Arizona and the controversial proposed Pebble Mine in Alaska.
What about fracking? Will he end fracking?
That is still up in the air.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, as if to underscore the stark differences between the two major parties, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency is set to formally issue new rules to weaken key Obama-era standards restricting methane pollution from the oil and gas industry. The rollbacks include eliminating federal requirements that oil and gas companies install technology to detect and fix leaks of methane, an extremely potent greenhouse gas. However, the new rules could be reversed if Democrats win the White House and take control of the Senate.
A rollback, rollback?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take it.
In Pennsylvania, cleanup operations are now underway from a new spill on the controversial Mariner East 2 pipeline under construction. Drilling mud flowed into a state park lake that also provides drinking water for Chester County residents. Mm. The $3 billion Mariner East pipeline has racked up more than 100 environmental violations in just 3 years for polluting wetlands and waterways.
I hope Joe Biden notices that's his home state.
But some good news. Carbon Brief reports that over the first 6 months of 2020, the size of the global coal power fleet fell for the first time ever, meaning that more coal plants were shut down than opened around the world this year.
When will Donald Trump stop his war on coal?
In a blistering ruling, a U.S. district court has struck down Trump administration rule changes that gave nearly free rein for individuals and corporations to kill migratory birds. The judge wrote that the Department of Interior's actions to undo the Migratory Bird Act were contrary to law, saying, quote, "It is not only a sin to kill a mockingbird, it is also a crime."
That ruling is for the birds. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Look at her in the alley by the light switch. Who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul.
That was They Might Be Giants, wasn't it? Kind of sounded like. Yeah. So, we're nearing the halfway point of this thorn in the side Thursday. Ron in Raleigh says, "You're a sadist. You played that entire clip of that crazy woman. Thank God the shit show was done, or you would have subjected us to that too." By the way, Hong Kong is not a fucking manufacturing center. When we started sending our jobs to China, it was to the mainland. Britain was still in charge in Hong Kong. The man is fucking illiterate idiot. Please stop subjecting us to his blithering. And no, Penny Dreadful is still on the Penny Dreadful City of Angels is still on the watch list. I don't something like that. I won't start without Agnes. And we're pretty much we're binging a lot of stuff, but it's on the list. I assure you, it's on the list. Subject line: Goddamn 2020. Steve in New York says, "I have to vent for about 15 seconds. Goddamn 2020. I just found out that a very dear uncle's assisted living facility is transferring him to hospice care. It's been a rough few years for my uncle, having suffered several strokes and numerous mini-strokes. This is another reason for me to despise Donald Trump and every person who voted for him and those who support him. Why? Because had the carrot cockknocker done what any even half-brained person would have done, I would have been able to head to Ohio to at least say goodbye to my uncle in person and at his memorial service. So I'm not going to say that Trump caused his death. He didn't. However, the reason I cannot say goodbye in person to someone I've known for over 40 years, yeah, Trump caused that. Our family went on fishing trips, watched Bengals games, Reds games, watched Buckeyes games. He came to my baseball games and hockey games. He came to my high school and college graduation. That all aside, I'm not sad yet. I'm melancholy, eerily calm, but truly pensive. I understand. I can try to understand. 170,000. And a damned fool in Wisconsin is worried about satanic numerology in the ballistic projection of droplets. Damn. Just damn. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Herbert. Herbert just jumped in and took us down to $400. So Tuesday's done. Thank you for finishing off Tuesday, Herbert. Thank you very kindly. Little by little, and chunk by chunk, piece by piece, we're getting it knocked down. Thank you, Herbert, again. Thank you very kindly. Thorns in the side. History. You know how it is with me in history. I love it. Sometimes it doesn't love me back. But there's history by varying degrees. I was talking in the first hour about how Republicans have suddenly become such devotees of edumacation. Well, Agnes sent a story along, noting, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the administration didn't want to permit free lunches for school children, with a link to a story from Politico. Headline, "It's insane. Millions of kids could lose access to free meals if this program expires." And the story isn't dated that far back. July 21st, 2020. The Trump administration is resisting calls to make it easy for tens of millions of students to get free meals at school this year, even as childhood hunger rates have risen to the highest level in decades. Well, that's recent history. Has that gone away? Is that story no longer relevant or valid? Did they see the error of their ways? I sincerely doubt it. Because, once again, it has nothing to do with children. If they gave a damn about the well-being of children, there would not be a conversation taking place anywhere in this country about flinging the schoolhouse doors open and weaponizing the virus and sending it blazing into more homes than it has already found. But then again, they're just, at least in Florida, school children are all just going to be little Navy SEALs out there with their Second Amendment remedies, ready to shoot down the Rona. Mad fools. But history. I saw a tweet yesterday that went through me cold. And taken in context with something that, what did Brad Friedman refer to her as, the crazy fox lady? Well, again, I'm going to be very, very stingy with the use of the word lady for a while. He was talking about Jeanine Pirro. I would say apparent box of wine woman. Well, she caused a bit of a stir. And of course, I guess with things like this, there's no such thing as bad publicity, but still. It was in her program last night, Wednesday, the 12th of August. That she, in her babbling, made an allegation that sounded, well, kind of really creepy. Trying to find the actual audio of it real quick. Here it is. I'm going to get to Hockey Puck.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. The first thought that I have, Jesse, is for some reason, I just have this feeling that Joe Biden isn't going to be on the ticket. I have a sense that something's going to happen before the election, and he's not even going to be on the ticket. So don't even ask me if he's going to make the 4 years.
Hmm. to be fair, we have had some conversations on this program about mortality and about the wisdom of turning the presidency into a geriatric position and about things like actuarial tables and mortality tables and risk factors. Now, I have to say, I was heartened the other day when I saw a video of Joe Biden riding a bicycle in a group of other people, but he didn't seem to have any problem riding the bicycle. That indicates a pretty good set of still functioning motor skills at 78. He was quick enough that when some reporter said, "Have you picked your vice president?" This was before the announcement. He said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, who is it?" And he said, "You." Quick, snappy. It seemed a much better it seemed a much better indication of his well-being, you know, coupled with the fact that he managed to do a 30-minute speech yesterday without any fumbling or bumbling or declaring that the 1918 flu pandemic ended the Second World War or anything like that. And so far, I'm pretty sure that he can repeat the words person, man, woman, camera, TV without any problems. You might recall that Nitwit Nero sort of had to ponder that. But I've worried, and it was not merely in the context of Joe Biden. Even before the COVID-19 crisis struck us, I have questioned whether it is wise to continue pushing the boundaries of just how old a president we can have. Because that seems to be what this latest round is. We had a young, vital, and energetic president in Barack Obama. And then we decided, not so much. And the two primary contenders for the nomination, the Democratic nomination in 2016, were moving in on septuagenarian status, or already in septuagenarian status. Hillary Clinton was in her late 60s at the time, and Nitwit Nero was 70, 71. And I stand by my concerns in that regard. For the reasons stated, it's just the nature of life on human life on Earth. Human lifespan has largely expanded. Human lifespan has largely expanded in the developed world over the past 75 to 100 years. And a lot of that can be credited to progressive policy changes that begin with things like workers' compensation, up through unemployment compensation, universal health care in at least some countries, not here. Social Security in this country, Medicare especially, beginning in, 1968 with LBJ. I warned you about the possibility the program would go away. I just had a power surge beep from the uninterruptible power supplies, and that was followed moments later by a peal of thunder. Just a note, just a warning. Not a warning, I mean, it's not like you need to take cover, but if the program disappears, you know why. Appalachian Power. But all of that having been said, my concerns about older presidents is nothing even remotely similar to what Jeanine Pirro was doing last night. She was engaging in some wishcraft. Hoping that something would happen to Joe Biden.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. The first thought that I have, Jesse, is for some reason, I just have this feeling that Joe Biden isn't going to be on the ticket. I have a sense that something's going to happen before the election, and he's not even going to be on the ticket. So don't even ask me if he's going to make the 4 years.
Now, is that a feeling that she found at the bottom of the wine box? Is it something that maybe she masturbates over? I'm trying to sort this stuff out, because she doesn't go where I went. Lifespans, actuarial tables, mortality and morbidity. She just has a feeling that he's not going to be on the ballot. Is she reading her program's message boards with the homicidal maniac maggots out there shrieking and howling? Is she getting emails from people? I'm going to take that. I think the American people damned well deserve to know. Of course, now, she's walking it back. Well, Fox News did. She didn't. No. Instead, they left it to Bret Baier, who said, you know, Jeanine has fiery passion. Well, Jeanine has a box of wine. And Baier went on and said, next week we're going to see the official nomination. You're saying he doesn't make it all the way? The bumper stickers are already printed. It's Biden-Harris, and he's going to be the nominee as of next week. But, you know, she didn't. No. What she was doing was dog whistling a threat against Joe Biden's life. Thank you, Ralph. Ralph's watching the weather for us. Some storms near West Virginia's western border, west of Beckley. Well, it probably means it's swinging this way. Damn it. Okay, I've been corrected. Lee in New York says, when you say crazy Fox lady, it's far too vague a reference. I know it's not tuckered out from ranting or the Fox and Friends bookends, but you have to narrow it down some. All right. Crazy Fox woman with a box of wine. Now, Jeanine did say, look, I wish him all good health. That's not what I'm talking about. He's got the numbers, but things are so crazy right now, I don't know what's happening in the Democratic Party, and that's all I'm saying. Well, that's a terrible accent. Yes, it is. I mean, I hope he lives forever. That's not my point. I know he's got the numbers. No, this is typical right-wing eliminationist rhetoric. Plain and fucking simple. And like I said a minute ago, history. Last night, Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick, daughter of a guy who shot his own friend in the face. Liz Cheney took to the Twitter in regard to Kamala Harris. No, I'm sorry, it was Tuesday, the 11th. 6:17 p.m., August the 11th. Kamala Harris, Liz Cheney tweeted, is a radical liberal. Now that's a challenge word. That's an inflammatory word. That's a word that has meaning to maggots and Republicans that they take and internalize differently than we do. We see Kamala Harris as a radical liberal, and we laugh because we're radical liberals, and we know what a radical liberal is and does and looks like and sounds like. And none of those things are either Kamala Harris or Joe Biden. But according to Liz Cheney, Kamala Harris is a radical liberal. Yeah, she kind of sounds like her dad, too. Kamala Harris is a radical liberal who would raise taxes, take away guns and health insurance, and explode the size and power of the federal government. So we've got radical liberal, taxes, guns, health insurance, and use the word, and she uses the word explode. If you think that doesn't have a different kind of meaning to Republicans and maggots than it has to you and me, you're not paying attention. And then, because this is more dog whistling, Liz Cheney said, she wants to recreate America in the image of what's happening on the streets of Portland and Seattle. Well, what's happening on the streets of Portland and Seattle is largely peaceful protest over the ongoing propensity of police to kill black men and women in cold blood. And then the final sentence of her tweet. We won't give her the chance. That right there is pure eliminationist rhetoric. That is a call to action. That is a threat on the life of Kamala Harris. If you're, for instance, if you're familiar, for instance, with the work of our buddy Dave Neiwert, who is the single greatest authority on right-wing eliminationism in the entire United States, this is literally textbook stuff. And when I read those words, we won't give her the chance, the little hairs stood up on the back of my neck. Because that's the same sort of thing that Hannity and Limbaugh and Bernie Goldberg and O'Reilly and the Savage Wiener and so forth, that's the same kind of poison they were pouring into the body politic that eventually convinced a man named Adkisson to go and shoot up a Unitarian Universalist congregation in Knoxville, Tennessee, many years back. And he left a manifesto. And if you want to see the real, real soul of Republicanism, read it someday. His name's Adkisson. Look up his name and Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. or Glenn the Beckerhead, who day in and day out hollered about the Tides Foundation and George Soros and progressives are going to destroy America, until a guy packed up all his guns in his trunk and started driving for toward San Francisco with the goal of shooting up the Tides Foundation and ending the threat. The only thing that saved the Tides Foundation was that the killer, who had been weaponized by Glenn Beck, had to drink a big bottle of 80-proof liquid courage before he could get the job done, and wound up getting busted for DUI. On the day, this is the history part, on the day before Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln attended the performance of Our American Cousin at Ford's Theater, an actor by the name of John Wilkes Booth heard some impromptu remarks given by President Lincoln from a balcony at the White House. The Civil War was over, but not over. Lee's army had surrendered, but Johnston's army was still a fighting force in the field. And John Wilkes Booth was in the crowd that heard the remarks that Lincoln gave, and among other things, Lincoln said that it was his intent that freedmen, men, because still a lot of work to do, freedom-wise, but that freed black men would be given the vote, that was his intent. And on that day, John Wilkes Booth was heard to say, "It's the last speech he'll ever give." And hanging around the stage door at Ford's Theater, one of the Fords told Booth that the President and First Lady would be attending the performance of Our American Cousin that night. And the rest, as they say, is history. And if anyone, at that point in time, Alan Pinkerton was making a name for himself, providing a security detail to Abraham Lincoln. Alan Pinkerton would go on to become a hellish nightmare scourge, servant of the moneyed class, suppressing the rights of working people who simply wanted to be treated like human beings. Pinkerton became a swear word in the early labor circles. Had any of Pinkerton's men heard Booth say that, history might have been entirely different. But that was clearly a threat on Lincoln's life. A few years back, Bill O'Reilly, day in and day out, night in and night out, show in and show out, hammered upon a licensed physician who had dedicated his life to women's reproductive rights and health care. His name was Dr. Tiller. Show in and show out, night in and night out, Bill O'Reilly banged away because Bill O'Reilly thought himself so fucking clever. He banged away on Tiller the Killer, Tiller, the killer. Tiller, the killer. Until Dr. Tiller was assassinated at long range. And Bill O'Reilly did everything but pulled the trigger. We have that sort of evidence here. Radical liberal, raise taxes, take away guns, explode the size and power of the federal government. We won't give her the chance. But, of course, it's entirely too much to ask the Secret Service to drop by Liz's place and say, we'd like a word with you, ma'am. We're charged with protecting Senator Harris as well as Vice President Biden during this campaign. And you're putting our agents at risk because someone can see your words and take them as an exhortation to do her harm. Because nothing would keep her from having the chance to do all those things more than for some fucking maggot, some godforsaken gun humper, some conservative Republican to use what Donald Trump referred to in the 2016 election cycle as the Second Amendment remedy. Yeah. It is hot and getting hotter. There's a reason I kind of started with the crazy woman in Wisconsin. Because it's crazy all the way down to the ground. There's not a rational maggot left. The Republicans as a nominally sane political party, that ended a long time ago. We won't give her the chance. It'll be the last speech he ever makes. Yeah, he was. Dr. Tiller was killed in church. Lee in New York pointing that out. I think it was another doctor who was assassinated at long range. Jesus. They're hot. They're angry. People like Liz Cheney and Jeanine Pirro know their base. They know it all too well. And they know what they're capable of. Oh, yes, they do. Dr. Tiller was killed in church, that's right. It was another doctor who was assassinated at long range, I think as he stood at his kitchen window. I can't remember that doctor's name. How sad that we have enough of them, of these sorts of cases, that they're hard to keep track of. And so as we approach the third hour of the program, I want to send out thanks to our buddy Mark in Boulder. Challenge through Friday on the front porch. Mark says, I'd like to challenge other listeners to pledge. I'll match up to $120. Since you're more than halfway through the show today, I'd like to keep the pledge good through Friday on the front porch. The show and you and the members of the Horn family are an important part of my life. Thank you, Mark. So that means that if Mark's challenge were to be met, we would knock out more than a day's worth of programming or of funding. We finished Tuesday. That would wipe out Wednesday and part of yesterday, or part of today, rather. Ciphering. It's my thin suit. Short suit. Not good at it. Thank you, Mark. So there's $120 worth of matching monies that are available courtesy of Mark Mark and Boulder. If they're not met this evening or matched this evening, then it will continue through Friday on the front porch. God, Bob, Megan says, you're making me right today. Jeanine Pirro is afraid of Kamala Harris taking over. That's what she's gearing up toward. She's trying to raise fear that Kamala Harris will make it to the highest office in the land by hook, by crook, or by fate. I, too, am worried about Biden. His first appearance with Senator Harris, I thought he looked like all this campaigning has knocked the stuffing out of him. I'm worried what the uphill battle to clean up COVID Caligula's mess will do to him. I'm glad he's got an energetic partner on this ticket to help him, and I hope he delegates jobs to an entirely smart, energetic, and helping crew. But in this case, Pirro is telegraphing her fear that the highest office in the land will be taken over by a gasp, brown woman. The horror. Oh, it's every bit the motivation that it was in 2008 when, for instance, a Democratic primary voter in West Virginia interviewed after voting for Hillary Clinton after Obama already had it all sewed up nationally, said, well, I just don't think we're ready for one of those in the White House. And besides, my pastor told me he's a Muslim. Yep, birtherism. Birtherism that is back with vicious vengeance in the form of a punk-ass law professor from a law school nobody ever heard of who has put birtherism forward on the pages of Newsweek, which is now owned by the bizarro religious cult that was started by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, I do believe. Yeah, according to that guy, the 14th Amendment doesn't say what the 14th Amendment says it says. And Newsweek not only published it, then bragged about publishing it and said, No, we're not advancing birtherism. This isn't racist. Shh. Yes. Yes, it was. Oh, so much filth. And so, even trying to put the program together earlier today, it's a different program earlier today than it is right now, because among other things, you know, yesterday, Nitwit Nero said the quiet part out loud. He made it plain that the reason he wants to kill the post office is because he's terrified of people being able to mail in their ballots. And maybe, you know, maybe that's just his paranoid ranting until you find out that whistleblowers in the Postal Service, and particularly in the Postal Workers Union out in Iowa, announced Tuesday that massive postal sorting machines are being uninstalled from postal facilities. It is no accident that we're talking about Iowa. Iowa Postal Workers Union President Kimberly Carroll, who's been with the Postal Service for 30 years, said, mail is beginning to pile up in our offices and we're seeing equipment being removed. I don't see this as cost-saving measures. I see this as a way to undermine the public confidence in the mail service. Equipment that we use to process mail for delivery. Ooh, that's, yeah. Including sorting machines, is being removed from Postal Service facilities in Iowa. And in Iowa, we're losing machines, and they already in Waterloo were losing one of those machines. So that also hinders our ability to process mail in the way that we had in the past. So it becomes obvious that this is not some... That, you know, there are conspiracies, and there are conspiracies. The conspiracy, for instance, given our historic reference of the evening, there was a real conspiracy against the life of Lincoln and his cabinet. Lincoln, Seward, Stanton, and Johnson were all supposed to be killed. Only Lincoln was. But the conspiracy was real. QAnon, on the other hand, not so much. But it's pretty clear that there is a conspiracy with regard to the Postal Service. Louis DeJoy, who owns tens of millions of dollars in stock in other delivery companies, and was hastily installed as the head of the Postal Service, is busting his ass, and the documents are there. Reuters had the story. Now, thanks to Louis DeJoy, mail carriers have to leave on their routes first thing in the morning, and the only thing they can carry with them are packages and letters that were sorted the night before. That is from an internal memo. One aspect of, and this is from the memo, one aspect of these changes that may be difficult for employees is that temporarily we may see mail left behind or mail on the workroom floor or docks. Meanwhile, Louis DeJoy wants to knock out 64 million labor hours nationwide to cut into the pay of postal workers. And where, with the machines doing the sorting, the load that they would start with in the day would be the load that they would deliver. Now postal workers have to double back. If they want to get everything out, they have to double back and pick up whatever has been sorted since the morning. This is a real conspiracy. I mentioned QAnon, though. There are, for instance, real organizations out there that fight child trafficking and sexual trafficking. Save the Children, for instance, is a registered charity. And they created the hashtag Save the Children. The QAnon goonies glommed onto that and sort of as the coronavirus inserts itself into healthy cells to turn them into virus machines. Well, they did the same thing with Save the Children, and the next thing you know, they're babbling about Tom Hanks, Oprah Winfrey, and Pope Francis. And so, the people who have actually done the hard work on the ground of fighting child sex trafficking are being hamstrung by the QAnon dickheads and assholes. And even the FBI, under our entirely suspect Department of Justice, has noted that QAnon has the power to be a domestic terrorist organization. Oh, there's a lot of thunder out there. So far the antiquated, rickety, batshit baling wire, spitting toilet paper, and old chewing gum power grid, Appalachian Power, is holding up. Knock wood. Oh, and thank you very kindly. Responses coming in on Mark's challenge. Thanks to Will in Chicago. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Jeremy for jumping back in. So that's $95 met out of 120 in that short amount of time. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Mark. And thank you, Jeremy. Thanks very much indeed. And thank you, Will. So, says Jeremy, we're screwing the U.S. mail system to fuck voting, yet UPS drivers who on average make $80,000 a year are complaining they work too much. Go figure. And I remember a lot of years ago when they had to go on strike. And I always preferred UPS to FedEx because at least they were union. Are y'all hearing that? Is the mic picking that up? That's one of the better ones we've had this summer. Yeah, I won't be going outside and grilling any Kaneka after the program. Okay. I know you heard that one. Woo! There was even a snap there from the lightning. Information regarding the Rona to tell your Trumpansy and other half-human friends and encounters. A graph from Stephen, New York. Remember how Nitwit Nero said our death rates were so low? Well, take a look at one of my graphs. There's an orange line of U.S. deaths per million. And yes, it's five times the world deaths per million and rising very rapidly. And then remember how Nitwit Nero said our rates were so low, our infection rates? Well, if you're looking at the orange line on that graph, U.S. cases per million, and wondering if you're truly seeing that it's 16 times the world cases per million and rising very rapidly, you're looking at that correctly, too. No, we can't hear the thunder. Hee, 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 says Steve in New York. It's pretty well right over top of me right now. Maybe it's moving past. Ron in Raleigh says, don't forget, not only does this move slow mail delivery, it also makes it impossible to fund the health insurance 75 years into the future. I'd like to know which fucking Democrats voted for that piece of shit bill that required funding health care plans 75 years into the future. I wonder, there's a bill history out there. Maybe some did. But it happened far enough back that that was the, unless I miss my guess, that was a deeply Republican Congress. Good. I always appreciate audio file quality for the live program. Jeremy says, the thunder comes through in nicely with headphones. I'm just waiting for the bass line from Riders on the Storm to kick in. Boom. Thank you to Libby jumping in on Mark's challenge. That's getting us very, very close to being complete. Thank you, Libby. And it wasn't just health expenditures, Steve says. It was pensions 75 years into the future. Well, that's one way of looking at it. Megan says it sounds like Thor is swinging his hammer over there. Wow. That was righteous. Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder if maybe I ought to shut things down. But everything's behind uninterruptible power supplies. Thanks very kindly to the individual who made that possible. Everything, even the new fridge, is protected. Let's run over and check in with Scott and see what's going on. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I think you ought to be truly adventurous. Do you remember Lieutenant Dan in the movie Forrest Gump?
Yeah, I was thinking, you want me to be adventurous. I was thinking about the Episcopalian bishop on the golf course in Caddyshack.
Well, there's that. But see, since you've got so much...
Rat fart!
Mother Nature's putting on a magnificent sound and light show for you. Strip off your shirt and climb up the mast and rail against the invisible, imaginary almighty for a while.
What makes you think I've got a shirt on?
Oh, that's right. You do naked or semi-naked radio. I keep forgetting. Jesus. Boy. Put me down for $5.
Well, thank you.
I got a good news today, so... And that's a challenge too good not to meet. Which brings me kind of to the purpose of the call. Back in the olden days, you didn't have a Safeway or a Vons or a Ralph's or a Albertsons on, you know, within a 5-minute drive. Hell, you couldn't even drive. You'd have to hitch up the horse to the buggy and travel, you know, 15 or 20 miles.
Yeah, hitch old Dobbin to the Shay.
Yeah, for anything that you didn't grow on the old homestead, you had to go through some changes, you know, to get it. You know, unless it was in the Sears catalog or the Montgomery Ward catalog, and you could order it and wait for it to show up, which was a big day. It's like that song in The Music Man, the Wells Fargo Man. I love that musical. But anyway, the point of it is, back in the olden days, people would gather at the general store. A lot of those places, that's where the post office was, speaking of the post office. Sam Drucker, on Green Acres and Petticoat Junction, that wasn't a joke. The local general store was a multi-purpose place. It was a place where you get your stuff that you can't grow yourself. It was a place where you pick up your mail, because this was way before, you know, RFD, rural...
Free delivery.
Some free delivery. It was before that, okay? It was certainly before UPS and their brown trucks and their guys in the shorts and stuff.
But you know what? It's not so far back in the past that it's not known within my family. One of the more precious items that we have is a set of ledgers. And in it, you can see who in that community was buying what: shotgun shells, sugar, flour, how many yards of gingham or muslin or whatever. And my grandfather, as a young man, out at a little community called Ramsey, had the store, a sawmill, and the post office. Just like you were talking about with Mr. Drucker, only real.
Yeah. And it wasn't an uncommon thing in many parts of the country. I dare say up until maybe the 50s or 60s in some, you know, really way out places, that was the place. It was your post office. It was your general store. It was your gathering place. You'd sit there, put the checkerboard down on top of the old pickle barrel, and sit there and chaw a while and play a while and pick and scratch a while, you know? And that's what the horn is the 21st century equivalent. These daily gatherings are literally the 21st century equivalent of a long ago time, but a dynamic, the need of which still exists.
Why do you think we call what happens on Friday the front porch?
Well, there you go. And yesterday I was so
I have living memory of that store. And the buildings that it used to house are still standing here, not far from me. And
I'm sure.
As a child, I walked in there, and there were still jars of penny candy. And my grandmother would splurge, and she would buy a whole country ham. And I remember it wrapped in orange and white paper, orange and white striped paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be put in the ice chest. And sent home with us when we would leave here this time of year. When we would leave here to head back to Alabama, between my two grandmothers, my father would complain that the springs in the back of that 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan were going to give way and that we would bottom out on the first bump. There were canned peaches, canned blackberries, dried apples.
You were loaded up?
Absolutely.
Loaded up with stuff.
Well, and it was part of that Appalachian tradition. You know, you load up with all that good stuff because store-bought just ain't never as good. Except for that ham. And I think the ham was Conn's.
Well, damn. When I was so moved and touched yesterday with Tracy's call, and she was utilizing the program, the family, for the one of the purposes for which it was intended. And I'm like you, when I don't hear from somebody on the show, either through sending in an email or calling in or on the front porch or something, I kind of worry about them. Now, That is the case in normal times, but when you superimpose the unnormalcy of the times that we're in, you get worried more quickly when you don't hear from people.
You're absolutely right.
You know? And Tracy shared so openly and so willingly and so beautifully and authentically that it just touched me in a way. That's why I wrote that email that you commented on, that we're, you know, if we're not here for each other, then what's the fucking point? I mean, really, isn't that what it ultimately comes down to? Yes, we have our fun. Yes, we discuss weighty topics, political and social and otherwise. But when one of the main functions of this show is to be here for each other, especially in a time when very little, if anything, is truly certain. You can't get your head or your arms around a lot of stuff in today's world, you know? And that's why it's so fucking important. And I just wanted to throw that out there. I mean, we've talked in similar terms before, but, man, when Tracy called yesterday, it drove that point home big time for me, you know? So I just wanted to share that.
And the candor and the straightforwardness. I don't know of a lot of radio that allows that to happen.
No, it may have existed once upon a time. There was a show, and I know that Steve and George Georgistan knows what I'm going to say before I say it. There was a show back in the late '60s and early '70s. And it ran for a while longer. It initially was on KSL, big old blowtorch, 50,000 watt AM in Salt Lake City. And then later it was heard on KSL and WHAS in Louisville, another 50,000 watt clear channel, not clear channel, the company, but, you know, a powerhouse AM facility. And it was called The Nightcaps. And it was hosted by a guy named Herb Jepko. J-E-P-K-O, you can look him up. And people would call in, and you only had 5 minutes to do your spiel. And you could talk about anything except religion and politics. And you heard from America. You heard from other human beings in each of those little five-minute calls. And they had a theme song, and they may have had T-shirts. I don't remember. But it was human, just as human as could possibly be. And you're right. Nothing like that other than this show exists in today's media landscape. And we're the worse off for it. I don't know if Steve is listening, but I bet his little ears perked up when I started going there with the Nightcap show. And I discovered it by accident. When I had my first radio job, full-time radio job, in 1973, 6 to midnight, on a little station about 40 miles outside of D.C., at midnight, I'd shut down the old transmitter, which was hand-built, by the way, a little FM station, 3,000 watts, and drive back to D.C., which took an hour. And after 6 hours of music, I didn't want to hear music. So I'm playing around with the little AM radio in my little battered Chevy Vega. And I come across this conversation where these people are talking about really basic stuff. And I signed up for it. I would listen to that show every night just to get a feel for my fellow human beings.
I understand.
Did the lightning hit? Oh, I was afraid that the lightning hit.
Robert in Australia said, your thunder reminds me of the Alan Parsons Project album, Tales of Mystery and Imagination. A thunderstorm passed over the studio. They put a microphone at the door and recorded the sound of thunder and later wrote music to go with it. P.S. Can I hear rain? No, the processing will overcome the rain.
Yeah.
So in answer to Creedence Clearwater Revival, no, you'll never hear the rain. But the thunder? Absolutely.
And that's one thing I miss living out here. You know, living all over the Midwest and growing up in the D.C. area, this time of year, we would get some hellacious thunderstorms about this time in the afternoon. And we just don't get them where I live now. There are parts of California where you can still get weather, okay? But we have, like, three seasons out here. We have mild and rainy in the winter season. Then we have hot as fluorescent fuck from like July onward until October. It's just a very limited menu of weather up here in California. But it's a blue state, and we're sane. So there are trade-offs, you know? I don't have to, when I walk down to the Quick Trip or the 7-Eleven to get a Slurpee or whatever, or a Slushie, I don't have to worry about some, you know, red imported Chinese ball cap wearing, gun-toting fool saying Breaking Bad and Breaking It Ugly with me. So anyway, I just don't know. And let me repeat my mantra. This is going to be a regular thing whenever I call. When you get your mail-in ballot, within 24 to 48 hours, fill it out, sign the envelope if your state requires that, and hand deliver it to your local registrar of voters. Because the object of this exercise is to mail to vote early, vote safely, and don't give Trump and his cronies and crew anything to crow about come November. I want to see, come November 20th, I want to look on the platform built up on the Capitol with the dome and in the background and the flag and Lady Liberty or whatever, whoever's on top of that thing, Columbia, I think it is. On January 20th, in the year of our Lord 2021, I want to see on the platform, I want to see, after Joe Biden is sworn in, with our people looking happily and relievedly on. Remember that news tape of Jim Baker, not the former Reagan guy, but Jim Baker, the televangelist, when he was finally sentenced for his for his vacation scam, overselling, overbooking, his little Ponzi scheme there at the Holy Land amusement park or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, Jesus says, "Tell me, where did I say build a water slide?" That, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I will never forget that news tape of him in a white shirt, handcuffed, with federal marshals or state marshals surrounding him, and he's bloated. He's probably heavily medicated, and his face is red, and the tears are just streaming down his face. And it wasn't the phony crying that he used to do when he was raising money on his PTL club. These were real tears, because he was facing, what, 49 years or 99 years for his scams? That's what I want to see on the platform after Biden is sworn in. I want to see, never mind the butterfly net and the men with the classy Nehru white medical jackets. I want to see him frog march that fucker with tears coming down his orange face, with fucking orange makeup, Max Factor, an inch and a half thick, just tears and rivulets of white amid the orange, like a dreamsicle melting on a hot fucking sidewalk. That's what I want to see. I guess I'm vindictive, but God damn it. After four long years of this happy horse shit, I think all of us have a right to say, fuck you and the horse, Mr. T. God damn. Here, I was in a reasonably happy mood.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. I responded to Ron and Raleigh's question about, you know, who fucked the Postal Service. Well, Ron got busy, and he found the history of the passage of H.R. 22 in the 109th Congress, July 26, 2005. You know, the one that forced the Postal Service to do something that nobody else has to do. Right. And that is fund pensions and health care 75 years into the future for postal workers who haven't even been born yet.
Yeah, and whose idea was it, I wonder?
Well, I don't have all of it in front of me, but, you know, this is... I remember 2005.
Shit, I do too, Bob.
And, you know, that previous January, we had faced the ugly reality that we were going to have four more years of George W. Bush. And remember, he was talking about, I'm going to spend my political capital. I got some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. I'm going to prioritize Social Security. And so the Democrats were outnumbered, and they were in a capitulatory mood, apparently. That bill...
Oh, I like that word.
That bill, H.R. 22, according to GovTrack, passed 410 votes yay to 20 votes nay.
So there was culpability to go way, way around.
Yeah, and the only nay votes were Republicans. They're probably the Republicans who wanted to be funded 150 years into the future.
Jeez, but I'm amazed at that.
Just to give you an idea of who voted for it, this wholesale screwing of the Postal Service. Let's see. Let's look at California. A lot of these people are gone now. Barbara Lee's not. She voted for it. So did Nancy Pelosi. Anna Eshoo, Mike Honda, Zoe Lofgren all voted for it. Well, I mean, the entire Democratic caucus voted for it. Brad Sherman, Adam Schiff, Javier Becerra, Henry Waxman, Lucille Roybal Allard. Let's see. What district is that?
53rd, I think, or 2nd.
Well, all the Democrats voted for it. Susan Davis, aye.
Yeah.
All three of my representatives in West Virginia, two Democrats and one Republican back then, voted aye.
Well, what brought it on? What was going on that caused them to think that this was a nifty idea? What was the context in which this? Because that's a hell of a vote.
Well, the Postal Service had the Postal Service, like any other, practically any other pension in the country, had an unfunded liability.
That's right. Okay.
And back then, that phrase was and still is a fetish object for Republicans.
And were we still living in the age of Gingrich in terms of the House of Representatives? Was he still a factor?
No, no.
Okay. But he had left behind enough droppings. I mean, fellow Republican representatives.
Okay, but here's what's interesting. Like I said, the people who voted nay probably wanted 150 years. Here's your nay votes against fucking the Postal Service on this bill.
All right.
Louis Gohmert. Ron Paul. See, Ron Paul's presence there tells me what was going on. He didn't believe the Postal Service needed to exist at all. Mike Pence. Jeff Flake. Trent Franks.
Yes.
20 votes total. So, you know, this was a long time in the making, and apparently, well, there needs to be more work done as to why that happened, because everybody's running around with their hair on fire now, but it doesn't, And we realized the gravity of the situation. And I remember back years ago, people knowing what was going on. And I would dearly love to know there's a debate history and everything. You can look it up. I mean, this thing had to start out in a committee, for instance.
Yeah.
And there had to be hearings. And how did this fly under the radar as well as it did? Because, I mean, I was on air back then.
I remember 2004 and 2005. I mean, vividly. But I don't know. I guess my attention was on, as many people's attention were at the time. Was at the time? Whatever. The weapons of mass destruction, the invasion of Iraq in 2003, you know, the bogging down that occurred, and then in an election year, nothing of substance gets done or talked about in any meaningful way. You had Bush.
Well, and that's another thing. There's a dynamic that, and this is not by way of excuse making. But it's just understanding the dynamic that's at work. Every Congress has two sessions, because every Congress is 2 years long. The first session is year one. The second session is year two. Nothing ever happens of much substance in year two, because for all intents and purposes in the House, it's a campaign year.
Yeah.
And for a third of the Senate, it's a campaign year. So anything of significance is going to happen in year one, and July of 2005 would be a perfect time to do something like this. But the fact that the new Congress came into existence in January 2005, and they got this thing passed out of the House by July 26th, that says a mouthful. And Dave number 11 tells me that Susan Collins was a sponsor in the Senate.
Oh, God.
So, that, yeah.
Well, I don't know exactly, Bob, that the post office has been right since, what was it, 1970, when Nixon... See, the post office, the United States Post Office used to be a cabinet-level department.
Yes, it did.
In years gone by, until
the Postmaster General sat there around the table with Stanton and Seward and Salmon P. Chase and the other members of Lincoln's team of rivals.
Yeah. And so it went with the Post Office Department. I even remember the patch that the Post Office employees wore on their blue-gray uniforms. It was the Pony Express pony. It was a circular patch, you know. Of course, now, this was in the era when a postage stamp cost 5 cents for first-class letters. So we're talking a good little while ago. But somehow or another, that somebody got it in his or her or their heads that wouldn't it be a neat idea to revamp and maybe allegedly improve, in air quotes, and call it the USPS and make it not a cabinet, department of government.
I wonder if that was the same time when they got rid of that Pony Express patch and turned it into an eagle.
Oh, I'm sure it was. The guy who designed that logo was a famous industrial designer, Raymond Loewy. L-O-W-Y, I believe he spelled his name. Yeah, he gave us a lot of iconic. He gave us the AT&T Bell logo, the modernized Bell logo, a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, I'm sure that was all tied up into that.
Well, I look at the date and the time of that. And, you know, like I said, I remember that as the time when George Bush said, I got me some political capital. I'm going to spend it. Privatize Social Security.
No.
I'm sorry. I always have to do my George W. Bush. but when I see a vote like that in a partisanly, in a hyper-partisan Congress like that was, I smell the scent of sausage making. And I wonder if this was some sort of nefarious deal making. To, I don't know, protect, you know, okay, you'll leave Social Security alone if we let you fuck the Postal Service. I don't know. I do not know the answer. But
That's not at all far-fetched.
It's the kind of thing that happens up there all the time. And by the way, the PAEA, which is what that bill was called, the House, Ron reminds us, voted to roll that back on February 5th of this year, and it's still sitting in a pool of blood and dust on Mitch's desk.
Yeah.
And I can't fathom how it is that you look at something like the Postal Service and say, you know, we really don't need that anymore. I mean, people, you know, send things to the Hornet. I say, well, I go to Beckley about every 2 weeks to the UPS box. You know, in the UPS store where, you know, the Klan also gets its mail.
Yeah.
Well, it's an expensive drive. Because it's close, you know, by the time I've dealt with Beckley traffic sucks. I don't mean like, you know, Boston or L.A. or Atlanta sucks, but small burg America traffic sucking, Beckley sucks.
Yeah.
But by the time all's said and done, you know, I've burned up 100 gallons worth of gas. Or not 100 gallons, 100 miles worth of gas. So I've burned up, you know, 5 gallons or so there and back. Well, the goal is for there to just be no more fucking post offices. And that's crazy. At least if you want to be a country that still refers to yourself as fucking civilized.
Well, it's a crazy quilt, Bob. And every square inch of that thing has a different color and a different pattern. Maybe not every square inch. Every 4-inch square is a different fragment of fabric from some source where it was used for Aunt Minnie's dress 20 years ago, but that little square, I mean, I'm looking at a crazy quilt, a quilt on my sofa that my mother made years ago, and I treasure that thing. And we're living in a crazy quilt of reality here, Bob. It's no matter where you turn, it's just nothing. There was a time. It's all part of the slow undoing of America. And that sounds dramatic, but look around you. Isn't that what has been unfolding in recent and even distant years, going back to, I would say, Goldwater was where a lot of this started. It really got its sea legs in 1964, you know? And I remember...
Yeah, all that conscience of a conservative horse shit. And then the rise of direct mail in the wake of the thumping that Goldwater took. Here's an interesting piece of trivia for you, though.
Okay.
Ralph's is oftentimes the ad hoc horn research department and has sent me along photographs of the various Postal Service patches.
Oh.
Now, get this. The patch first came into being in 1955, and they were available beginning on January 15th, 1956. Who's president?
Eisenhower.
The pony is riding to the right. It gets a makeover in 1965, and the pony is riding to the left.
And LBJ was president in 65.
From 1970, it was 1970 when we got the Eagle logo, and again, from 1970 to 1991, the Eagle was facing left. In 1991, with George H.W. Bush in office, the Eagle faced right.
And probably looked angrier and more fierce and powerful.
And has faced right ever since. Now, I realize that partakes a little bit of playing Pink Floyd records backwards.
No, it doesn't, Bob. And I'm not talking about, you know, my usual conspiracy-minded stuff. Symbols and symbolism are very powerful. We know that they're very powerful because if you go back in history when people were not literate, that's all the powers that were, that be at the time, had to stay in power. They used symbology and stuff that the common people, uneducated people, could grasp. So yes, symbols are very meaningful. I mean, I don't take it to a David Icke level, but I'm telling you, symbols are. I mean, even you remember what's his name? The Republican operative who wanted to, and I know Tom Hartman used to talk about this all the time. The phraseology is so tailored to be simple and yet
powerful.
Oh,
Gingrich's word list, Democrat Party instead of Democratic Party.
Yeah, to invoke the notion of a rat.
Right.
And that's precisely what, that's how insidious. See, this is the crazy quilting, the undoing of America. And I say it started full tilt boogie. It really got its sea legs. The latest chapter of it, anyway, was in 64. And you remember what... Now, here's the irony. The goddess of irony does not sleep. See, the Pinkerton Agency had a logo with one eye open and says, "We never sleep." The goddess of irony says, "Fuck that. I'm awake with both eyes all the fucking time, you know, and I read my memos, okay?" The goddess of irony does. So think back to 64. Goldwater is the Republican candidate going up against LBJ. He didn't have a fucking chance, but that wasn't the point. But Johnson's tagline on a lot of his commercials, the Daisy commercial, if you remember that one that ran once, and the others that ran more than once, the vote on November, whatever, the stakes are too high for you to stay home. Now, fast forward from 64 to...
In your heart, you know he's right, but in your guts, you know he's nuts.
Yeah. So fast forward now to 2020. We go from a world, I've actually lived in a world where at one time the motto was, the stakes are too high for you to stay home, vote LBJ, to a world where I can't leave home. I've got to send my ballot out and put it in the hands of people who want to destroy the fucking postal system. That's why I've got my mantra. When you get your ballot, read it over, fill it out, follow all the steps, seal it up, and take it, get on the bus, get on the bike, get on the, call a taxi cab, call Uber, get on the subway, wherever you have got to go, if you're able and can do it without risking any life or limb.
Wear your mask, wear your gloves, don't touch your face, social distance.
Yeah, but hand deliver that puppy to the good offices of your local registrar. And that way you know that it got to where it was supposed to go. Because this scares the fluorescent piss out of me, Bob. I saw that on the news last night with that woman, the postal person from Iowa. This is real, people. This is realer than real. This is where they are so desperate. People say, well, would they really do something like that? You bet your sweet ass they would do something like that. Not only something like that, they would do that.
You know, one of the things my paranoid mind cooked up.
Uh-oh.
I wonder if because one of the things that circulated in more or less progressive circles over the years, and I think maybe Bernie had a hand in spreading the idea, was to make the U.S. Postal Service an internet service provider, and let people do low grade, because other countries do this, let people do sort of small time banking at the Postal Service.
Works for me.
Yeah, I think it's a fine idea.
And it would generate it would infuse a lot of funds that are needed.
And that would probably make the rotten corpse of Ayn Rand and Milton Friedman both cry so hard that they would float themselves up above their own graves.
They would spin so hard they'd be down at the bottom of the hill. Where's Ann? Where's Milton? God damn it, they're down at the bottom of the hill again, Bob. Yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with things that work in a positive, appropriate way to move us, you know, imagine a world informed by the past, you know, each moment freely choosing a future of your own design that works positively and appropriately for all concerned. It's just that important. Key Reist. On a key record. I just don't know with these people. I just don't know. And I think I didn't see Biden wasn't my first choice, and Senator Harris was not my first choice.
Neither of them were either my first or my second.
I don't have a problem with either of them, because if the prophecy is going to be true, that Joe provides the leadership and the policy and stuff. Did you hear that first opening thing yesterday where they were on stage together and each of them gave a little talk? Trump has got to be pissing himself. Now, it's no wonder he's on fucking sedatives, you know? And she is going to tear Pence a new one. That is, if Mother allows Mike to be on the same stage.
Alone on the stage with that woman. Right.
That lady has come to play, you know? It's like I told you the other day. I sent you an email. I don't know if you used it. You know, we've got a Joan Crawford Pepsi boardroom moment. Don't fuck with me, fellas, you know, in Kamala Harris. She is not to be trifled with. And she'll let you know if you put as much as one toenail over the line. She'll
well, here's a new one. This is courtesy of David in South Carolina, Stan. a quote. Mike Pencil Neck Geek said, Senator Kamala Harris said she would change the dietary guidelines of this country to reduce the amount of red meat that Americans can eat. Crowd boos. Well, I've got some red meat for you. We're not going to let Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cut America's meat. Jesus, when we've got a president who probably has to have his meat cut for him. Fuck. Reminds me of a radio ad years and years ago down where I grew up. And it took them a little bit to realize that maybe it wasn't the best slogan. It was Pete's Country Meats. Want to guess what the slogan was?
You can't beat our meat.
Nobody beats Pete's meat. Met Pete once. He was a sad fella.
Give Pete a cowbell for coming up with that slogan. Well, one of my favorite slogans in Kansas City, and I hope it's still there, because restaurants are an endangered thing, Stroud's Chicken. Way in the south part of San Diego, or Kansas City. The best fucking fried chicken that you could ever want. And they have the chickens in the back. These are live chickens walking around that are pampered and taken.
You mean they hadn't died and passed away?
No, not yet. But these are farm-fresh chickens, Bob, until they kill them. But their motto at Stroud's is, we choke our own chickens.
And by the way, just radio talk, one of our pals, O-Pipe Down on Twitter, says, my daddy was a DJ at KSL. Morning Drive.
Oh, Salt Lake.
Morning Drive.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a blowtorch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and these are heritage stations. A lot of these stations are probably within spitting distance of being 100 years old. A lot of them.
Oh yeah, I mean every time I drive down to Alabama, you know, I of course take I-65 south out of Nashville, and you know, right there is that great big inverted. It's like a double inverted pyramid. Pyramid pointing down, yeah. Pyramid pointing up, huge tower. Yeah. And one, and the guy who was the engineer at the station that I worked at in Beckley was telling me that some of it, they could be heard in London during the Blitz.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, another one is WLW in Cincinnati.
Yep,
is still a blowtorch station. And back in the 30s, I think when Roosevelt was president, they got temporary authority to go up to either 100,000 watts or 500,000 watts. I forget which. Now, you pump out 500,000 or even 100,000 watts in the nighttime, under that nighttime sky, from the center of America on a clear channel. That is to say, there's no other station anywhere nearby with the power on that frequency. So you get virtually no interference. And they said that, like, lanterns, electric lights that had been turned off for the night would light up from the fucking radiated power coming off of that transmitter, that tower.
Oh, yeah. And you know, WSM in Nashville is still what it was. You know, it's the most well-known and, you know, absolutely historic country music radio station in the world. So,
the letters used to mean something at a lot of stations. WLS in Chicago was world's largest store, referring to Sears, I guess. Was it Sears? They had Chicago roots, I believe.
Yeah.
It must have been Sears, or whatever it was. WSM, wasn't that an insurance company?
Yeah, National Life and Accident Insurance Company. Signed on October 5th, 1925.
And WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut was the Travelers Insurance radio station. I used to know a lot of the old owners that. But yeah, back when AM radio was all there was, and it meant something. It was programmed and conducted in a responsible way, you know, like in the public interest, need, and necessity, that quaint notion of things, that approach. Not anymore, baby. It's been taken over by the crazies. And not without a purpose, not without a plan and a design. That's how someone intended for it to be.
And by the way, yes, everything stands for something. The motto of the National Life and Accident Insurance Company was, "We shield millions."
Yeah.
Don't know if they meant people or money.
Well, it might have been a tiny bit of one and a whole lot of the other, you know? But here we are. I mean, the undoing of America is in progress, and the only thing that's going to keep it from getting any worse, and hopefully steps to be taken far off into the future to undo some of the shit that's been done to this country, your chance is coming up, friends, on November 3rd.
Make it stick.
And yes, exactly. Exactly. We've gone, you know, right up to the edge of the end of the show, and we've been all over the place here. But I'm telling you, I cherish these conversations, Bob. I do. I wish more people. I would stop calling so much if more people would call in. You know.
Well, I enjoy our conversations. Don't worry about that. I mean. People call the program when people need to call the program.
Well, that's true.
And by the way, I got a note from Billable Rick. Bob, please tell Scotty to stop telling us how to vote by mail. So there's that.
Or not vote by mail, whichever the case may be.
Yeah, how to hand deliver our.
I'm not taking any chances. I'm hand delivering it. I know right where the registrar is. And I'm going to get on however many buses and trolley rides I need to take to get up there, walk in proudly with my head high and shoulders back and hand deliver it. And
well, Agnes asked me something earlier today, and I think it's a valid question. My knee-jerk reaction is, no, don't do that. They won't accept it. But, you know, what if you mail your ballot in, certified mail return receipt requested? Make them sign for the
it's
damn
good,
thing. Well, but if everybody does that, then the election folks get overwhelmed, and you put your ballot at risk again.
Yeah, you're better off if you have a registrar of voters in your vicinity, in your town or county or whatever, that you can easily get to without endangering your health or somebody else's. And a P.S. to that, if you do hand deliver your ballot, either to the polling station in your neighborhood, if such a thing exists this time around, or to the registrar of voters, on the way home, buy 3 or 4 stamps or a book of stamps and kick the postal service a few bucks. Even if you never use those stamps or don't use them anytime soon, you know, right now, that's our only...
Listen, you always need stamps, and stamps are fungible.
Yeah. And these are what do they call them? The universal stamps or whatever?
Forever stamps.
There's no forever stamps. If you buy them now, even if postage goes up to 75 cents for a first-class letter, you bought them at what, 52 or 59 or whatever they currently are? I don't even know. I buy a stamp every month to send in my rent, and I need to buy more.
Yeah, it's nice just to have a few laying around. I had a note.
Back,
I had a note from Iowa Dan in Southwest Iowa earlier, saying the undermining of the United States Postal Service seems really counterintuitive when you think about it. But we don't expect the orange ignoramus to think much now, do we? The USPS employs 600,000 employees directly and employs 7.3 million people indirectly. Damn. If I were attempting to undermine an election, I don't think I would cripple an industry that directly affects this many people. Not only may he turn off 7.3 million people, but you could, in theory, double, triple, and quadruple the amount of votes he loses by the time you factor in the families of these employees that depend on the USPS. This doesn't take into account the people that depend on USPS for their own personal business or depend on it for meds, paychecks, etc. It may or may not turn off people's desire to vote by mail, but but if you want to piss off 30 to 50 million people and lose their votes, go right ahead, Donnie. Stupid is as stupid does. And by the way, the thunder's loud and clear, Bob. It seems to have moved on. So we made it through the program without being knocked off the air, which is
really awesome. The other side of it, the other side of this vote by mail, doesn't he realize? And certainly, if he doesn't, the House members that are up on the Republican side and the 1/3 of the Senate, the Republicans in that group that are up come November, 82 days, whatever it is, don't they realize that this is not a time to be inhibiting or negating people's ability to cast a vote? Because it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, you may keep some Democrats from getting elected, but you're also risking the chance of your own fucking party. Or does it matter to you?
Well, and that is why, and by the way, a stamp is 55 cents. But that's why within this entire larger discussion, I keep feeling like I'm at a snake oil presentation, standing around the back of the wagon, while the major's little assistants go picking everybody in the crowd's pockets.
Yeah,
and that's not to say that focusing on the Postal Service is wrong. I'm not saying that in the least. But any time this much attention gets focused on one thing, you can bet your ass that some other dirty business is afoot.
Yeah, misdirection.
It's the whole, you know, it's watch this hand and not the other hand.
Well, hell,
It's Casablanca with the pickpocket talking to the husband and wife, and he says, "You must be careful. There are vultures everywhere," and walks away with the dude's wallet.
Yeah, you know, may I have your attention, ladies and gentlemen? If you direct your eyes to the center of the stage, Professor So and So is going to levitate his lovely assistants. Notice there are no wires, there are no strings.
Yeah, my dear friend Steve Trash has been on this program a number of times, and you know he made his living as a professional entertainer doing magic with an ecological flavor. And he loves to talk to kids about the difference between magic and science. Oh, it looks like we're going to have another thunderstorm.
Oh, boy.
And so the question is to figure out what kind of filthy, underhanded business is going on that this is diverting our attention from. I mean, we're talking about the Postal Service, so how about the fact that the Senate's not going to be, you know, Mitch McConnell's gone, they're not going to do a goddamn thing, people are going to be evicted, people are going to have their utilities cut off, people are going to start going hungry. And Mitch McConnell, frankly, doesn't care. But you'd be surprised the number of people saying, "God damn that Nancy Pelosi, why didn't she do something? How come he's already gone?" Well, she did something in May. They passed the fucking bill in May, and it's been sitting on McConnell's desk the whole time. And they've been she's been negotiating with Mnuchin, and Mnuchin's lying about it because Mnuchin's caught between a rock and a hard place because he, you know, being a money guy, would probably like to actually get something done. Don't want to do too much for the working stiffs or anything, but get something done and get some money flowing so that his pals can wet their beaks.
Yeah.
So what's holding this all back is Nitwit Nero, who admits that he doesn't give a damn about anybody. And as long as there's money for mail-in voting and postal service support, that the country can go and fuck itself. And of course, he's in permanent panic mode now, because with a running mate in place, the battle is joined, and so he's not going to be able to focus. And the Lincoln Project ads are doing their job.
Yeah, in his head.
And they're living rent-free in his head.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, you got assholes out there, I'm not going to name names, who are posting things like this that I saw today. So, when we have a Republican-controlled Congress and presidency again, then will you admit Biden was a shit choice? Because, you know, he's all butt hurt.
Yeah.
And that ain't no Republican. Well, no, that's a member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol.
And what
this jackass doesn't understand is that if Biden and Harris don't win, holy shit, I can barely even stand to say that. Well, the bottom line is, if the guy who got more votes than anybody else in the Democratic primary can't win, and we know that it's going to be a dirty uphill struggle any way you slice it, no, I won't admit he was a shit candidate, because he wasn't. And the fact of the matter is, if the people in the party spoke and chose Joe Biden, and Joe Biden got more votes than the other candidates, then arguing that some other candidate would have done a better job is just specious.
Well, if he or she would have done a better job, they would have done a better job.
I mean, if we're going to have primaries, shouldn't you have to fucking win them before you can claim that you're the better candidate?
Yeah. And see, the thing is, that's all stuff that need not be paid attention to, because that's not the conversation to have now. Like you say, the candidates are in place. On our side, you've got Biden, Harris, and on their side, you've got numbnuts and dibble frets. Okay? The situation could not be clearer to anybody that's got 20/20 vision, corrected or otherwise, and if not, even if they've got a brain between their ears with a few viable brain cells banging together, the situation could not be more clear.
and it could not be more dire. I'm not gonna burn up more time, because I got to end the program, but I'll just add this as maybe a hint for discussion tomorrow evening. And that's this. There is no small amount of racism involved in anyone who dares to say, "Goddamn DNC rigged it."
Yeah.
There is a metric shit ton of racism in that. So, yeah. As to another call sign, Billable Rick says, the radio and TV station in my hometown, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, KCRG means K for west of the Mississippi, unless it's KDK, Pittsburgh, and Cedar Rapids Gazette, that's the building and owner of the station.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere I've got a list. I'll have to email you that list.
Longtime member of Congress Nick Joe Rahal used to own WWNR AM 620 in Beckley. WWNR stands for Win with Nick Rahal. Yeah. All right, so we're out of here, Scott.
Well, all right, this is KFWB, the Warner Brothers station for Los Angeles. Los Angeles, signing off.
Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and climbed the skies on laughter's silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed to chase the shouting winds along, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And then, with quiet resting mind, I've reached out my hand and touched the face of God.
And now our national anthem.
Yeah, I always thought about that pilot reaching out his hand at about 60,000 feet, you know, letting the canopy back and everything. I don't think you're going to touch much at that point.
Well, it's the last thing you touched.
Depressurizing the cabin and freezing to death and everything. Later, Scott.
All right, Bob. Bye-bye.
Bye. And so we come to the end of the program with... I missed one contribution. Thank you very kindly to Women Standing, and thank you most kindly. And so that takes us down another $20, and in fact represents Mark's challenge having been fully met. So that means we go into. Tomorrow, Friday on the front porch, in much better shape than we otherwise would have. So that's, that's considerable. I'm trying to do the math, but I'll work it out later. And, yeah, there's another storm coming, so let's end the program. Thank you so much to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks so much to each and every one of you who subscribes either via PayPal or Patreon. Thank you to those of you who contribute a la carte. And many of you do all of the above. Thank you. This is Community Made Radio, and you're the one that makes the community. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Brand new Malloy, hot and ready to go, coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here at HeadOn.live, 6 p.m. Pacific. Best place to listen to the Malloy program, in my opinion. Tune in, find out. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay home if you can, stay safe. This thing's getting worse, not better. If you have to go out, well, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, carry your hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance, and for God's sakes, if you hear some damned fool hollering about how 6 foot social distancing is satanic, give yourself a pair of little index finger horns, wave it at her, and avoid her like the plague. Because, well, she is. Later, y'all.